Welcome to Look to the Moon podcast, bringing together two friends with stories that need sharing. Join us, Jodie and Nicole, as we navigate life after loss, discussing topics around birth, trauma, and baby loss, and providing a safe space for others to share their stories. Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 8 of Look to the Moon podcast. It's quite an exciting episode in terms of the fact that it's our first interview.
Yes, very exciting to speak to somebody else.
Yeah, so it was really, really nice that we've had a few people reach out. We had a lady called Claire reach out to us through Instagram. Oh, well, we were connected, didn't we?
Connected through Instagram.
Through Instagram. And Claire sadly lost her son in January of this year, and she allowed us to speak to her, and we sort of gave her the floor to tell her story, and it was a heartbreaking story, but lovely to hear how she has learnt to cope after the loss of her son Max. So I think we just want to say thank you to Claire for taking the time to speak to us and tell her story.
It's a Max story. I think it takes a brave person to openly speak about what they've gone through and to share their experience, especially, you know, with the tragic circumstances that it is of losing a baby. But yeah, like Jodie says, thank you, Claire, for putting yourself forward to say that you did want to share your story and for opening up to us and sharing your beautiful son Max with us.
Yeah, and I think what touched me is that, you know, Claire's finding positive ways to cope that is making her feel better physically and mentally. And her story was just really, really inspiring. So we hope that you enjoy. I hate that word. I always say enjoy like someone should get enjoyment out of listening, but it's not really the right term. But yeah. I hope that you find comfort in listening to Claire's story and, you know, sort of her finding those positive ways to cope after such a tragic loss.
Yeah, definitely.
Would that be the right way to sum it up?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Okay. Enjoy. Hi, Claire. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hiya. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no, we really, really appreciate you sparing the time. And we had a quick chat before we've started and we had some techie issues, but we've got through it, haven't we?
We're there. I'm on my phone, so.
That's all right. You've got techie issues at your end, techie issues at our end. But we're here and we're talking and that's what the aim of this podcast is. So I think, first off, as we explained, this is sort of your platform to talk about your story and the loss of your son. I think it was earlier this year. So I'll just hand over to you, and if you can sort of share your experience, sort of the story from the beginning, maybe even from the beginning of you getting pregnant and working your way forwards, and then we might interject with any questions or ask you to clarify things, they maybe for the listeners. So we'll hand over to you, Claire, and I think we're both looking forward to, it's maybe the wrong terminology, but we want to hear other people's stories.
This is the whole point of the podcast, is that we reach out to other people, and like, this is how we've met you, through the social media and through our podcast. And we know that you've got your own Instagram, which is helping you through everything. So when you're ready, if you want to start, wherever you feel comfortable to start with.
Am I here? We found out that we were pregnant in August, beginning of August, and we were so excited. It would it was our second pregnancy, so I already have a little boy who's three called Jensen. That pregnancy was textbook. It was great. I had a lot of sickness, sort of the first half. But other than that, no issues at all. I was induced because he was measuring a little bit small. He was born at 6 pound 1, so not small, but on the smaller side,
How many
which meant
weeks
I
were
was.
you induced that, Claire?
It was still a full term, so I think I was 39 plus four, something like that. So it was still towards the end. He wasn't early or anything like that. That did mean that I was under consultant with my second pregnancy, just because of the growth. I think with Jensen's pregnancy, I was sort of happy. I was very happy, but also so scared. I suffer with anxiety anyway. And I sort of didn't really want to let myself enjoy it throughout. And then giving birth, once he was here with a newborn, I was so anxious. I honestly say I don't think I enjoyed having a baby until maybe 4 or 5 months.
It's
I
hard
was just
work,
so
though, isn't
scared.
it? Such hard work.
Yeah, I was so anxious, so scared of everything, scared of him. And then obviously as you keep going, you get into a routine with everything, don't you? And you start to enjoy it. And he was the be all and end all to our life, really. And we thought, why don't we have another one? And this time I'm going to really enjoy it. I know what's coming. I know what to expect. I'm going to relax. I'm going to let myself enjoy it. So we tried for a second, catch straight away, which we were over the moon about. And then we found out that we were pregnant in early August. I had a great pregnancy this time around to begin with. There was no sickness, none of the horrible stuff that you get with pregnancy. And I honestly felt so great, so confident. People were always telling me, oh, you look great, you've got that pregnancy glow. And it was so different to the pregnancy with Jensen. I thought, this is going great. I was really excited. I couldn't wait, to have him and really enjoy that time with him. So we had an early scan at 7 weeks, a private one, all perfect. We had our 12-week scan at the hospital, all perfect. Still feeling great. We had the gender scan privately, found out it was another little boy. To begin with, I was like, no.
Double trouble. Mama boy.
Two boys, what am I going to do with two boys? But then obviously after a few days I was very happy. I think there's going to be a boy mom. And then we went for our 20-week scan just before Christmas. I think it was the 22nd of December. I remember it was really close to Christmas. All perfect again. Everything was working. Heart was working fine. All of his organs working fine. Brilliant. And then we enjoyed Christmas, went back to work. And then on the 25th of January, it was a Thursday. I work from home usually. And my internet was down at home, so I went to work at my mum's. I had a few meetings upstairs and I could really feel him kicking, so strong. And I went downstairs on my lunch and said to my mum, he's really kicking me today. It's like I must be Irish dancing. And I honestly felt like he was doing this on my bladder. This little bugger, he's just Irish dancing. But still felt great. I honestly felt amazing. I had so much energy. I had no problems. I had zero problems. My husband met me at my mum's. She was cooking dinner for us all. My sister was there, her husband, my nephew. We were all playing with the boys. She'd cooked enchiladas for tea. So we all sat down and we were having tea together. And And then after tea, my stomach just started to feel heavy.
Yeah.
And it felt like I needed a really big poo. So I went upstairs and I was like, hang on. We were getting ready to go. We had our coats and everything on. And I said, hang on, can't go yet. I need
Yeah.
a poo.
As you
Nature
do. Oh, yeah,
calls.
you gotta go.
You've
Especially
got to
when you're
go.
pregnant.
Yeah, you've got to go. So I went upstairs, came back down, and I remember making a joke of that his legs were going to be out soon because it just felt so low and so heavy, the bump did.
Yeah.
And I remember walking downstairs, my legs were like wide apart, and I was carrying my bump. I was like, oh my God, he's going to be out soon. So he just felt so heavy.
Yeah.
I had no real pain at this point or anything like that. We just carried on as normal, went home, didn't think anything of it, put Jensen to bed, got into bed myself because I thought, I'm a bit uncomfortable, so I'm just going to go to bed.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get comfy, and the pain was just gradually getting worse and worse. I thought, oh, I'll try and go to the toilet again, or it must be really bad wind.
Not
Something's
right.
really uncomfortable. And at this point, my husband was working nights, so he'd just come off a night shift, woke up early. So he goes to bed on a Thursday quite early, and he's out like a light because he's giving off about 4 hours sleep. But he was dead to the world. I was just lying in bed, texting my mum and my sister, like, oh, she's getting really painful now. What should I do? Should I just try and go to sleep, or should I sit on the toilet, or what can I do? And they were saying, oh, maybe it's just turning, maybe it is a bit of wind, maybe it's, you go through all these things, don't you? And it was getting more and more painful. I started to have waves of sickness. So I rang MAU, told them my symptoms, and she said, it sounds like a water infection. Go back to, yeah,
That's
she
not
said,
what
it
I was
sounds like,
expecting.
no,
That's
it's
not what I
like,
was expecting either.
no. But
No.
where was your pain? Was your pain round your bump or your back or?
Very low pain, so like your pain, and low at the back as well, like labour pains. But I told her all my symptoms. Obviously, at this point, I am 24 plus 5 days. So not very far, you wouldn't really expect it to be labour or anything like that. So I phoned MAU and said, told her my symptoms. She said, it sounds like a water infection. Take some paracetamol, try and get some sleep, and call your GP in the morning. So I said, okay. Text my mum and sister back. This is what she said. I'm going to try and go to sleep. So I got back into bed, and I just could not get comfortable. I was in pain then. It was really quite painful. No matter how I lay, it was really hurting. And my husband woke up at that point, and he said, "What's the matter?" And I told him, and he said, "Well, we're just going to go and get checked." He said, "Ring them back, tell them that we're coming to hospital to get checked. Do they want us to go and see them, or do they want us to go to A&E?" I said, okay then. So I got out of bed, started to ring MAU back, and that's when I noticed some blood, and I'd started bleeding. So we came downstairs, phoned MAU back, and they said, hang up and call an ambulance straight away. They'll get you here. So that's what we did. We called the ambulance, and I thought, oh, we're going to be waiting hours now. But they were really good. She stayed on the phone. The lady 999 dispatch, she stayed on the phone to me, and it felt like the ambulance was coming 5, 10 minutes. It was really quick. She told me to lie on the sofa on my left-hand side, talking to me all the way through, and then two ambulance guys came in. My sister came to watch Jensen so husband could come with me. Two ambulance guys came in, and they said, look, we're not midwives, so we're going to take you into hospital. They'll check you over. because we don't really know what we're doing with pregnant people. I said, fine, that's okay. Walked to the ambulance, got in the ambulance. They were putting all wires on me and checking your vitals, I don't know. And in the ambulance, I remember I started to shake and I started to get labour pains. I remember them from having Jensen. And I started to think then, oh my God, I'm going into labour at 24 weeks. But I remember thinking, you're okay because you're over 24 weeks and that's the viable age. Like, we're going to have a really early birth, going to be in NICU for a while, but we're going to be okay. Once we got to hospital, the ambulance guys took us straight up to labour and delivery. And I remember being wheeled in, and there was, I call them angels, but there was the surgeon, the consultant, and two midwives there waiting for us. They took us straight into a room, immediately started putting cannula in and checking. At this point, he didn't say anything. He just thought, I think you're in early labour. Do you think your waters might have broke? Do you? And he was asking me a few different questions, and I said, no, I don't, not that I'm aware of. I said, I did wee a bit the other day when I sneezed, but I don't think it was my waters breaking. I'm not sure. It happens.
Happens.
And then he brought a scanner in, and started to scan, and it felt like a lifetime that he was doing that over my belly. And then the two midwives that were in the room with us backed away to a corner, like sort of backed away from the bed. Before that, they were like right next to me. And I remember them backing away and he was still scanning. And it was just silent. It was silent. And I thought, the machine's not on loud. It's the machine is on silent. So that's why we can't hear a heartbeat. He's looking for that little movement. And then he said, I'm very sorry, there's no movement, no heartbeat. And like the midwife, he backed away then, and the midwives, swam in and just, held us. And even at that point, you're like, he's got it wrong, And even he said, I will get a sonographer to double check, but this is a Thursday night, it's probably about midnight now. He said, I'll get a sonographer to double check in the morning, but I think you're going to have the baby before then. And I said, I can't. I said, I'm not giving birth. I'm not giving birth. I said, can I have a C-section? I'm not giving birth. And Michael said, you can't make her give birth, like knowing that he's dead. And he was like, it's the safest way. He said, we would only do a C-section if she starts hemorrhaging or, something terrible happens and we need to get the baby out immediately. But as it stands, she's bleeding lightly. Her body is already going into labour, and I think she's going to have this baby before morning. And we just both break down then. I just look at Michael and I start saying, I'm so sorry, because you just feel that instant guilt. And I remember him saying, Claire, like, you haven't done anything wrong. This is the worst thing in the world and it's unfair. He says, you haven't done anything wrong. And I just remember saying, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. Which was troubling. And then the midwives swooped in and they were amazing. They were so amazing, all the way through. And then I remember it as I felt like because I'd started crying and because I'd got worked up, I just remember liquid coming out.
Yeah.
And I said to her, I said, I can feel the blood coming out now. I couldn't see it, but I could feel it. And they looked and they were like, yeah, that's quite a lot of blood. And it just kept coming. I was hemorrhaging. And then the surgeon came back in. He had left the room. He came back in and said, right, we're going to have to do a C-section because you're bleeding quite a lot. We're going to have to get him out. And I remember feeling relieved, like, thank God I don't have to give birth to, it was my worst nightmare was to give birth, and not have that baby cry at the end. And I had to sign a waiver in the middle of all of this. Like, I had to sign a waiver, and I was like, I don't even know what I'm
Like you've
signing.
got capacity to make that decision
Yeah.
at that
And
time.
you assume that waiver
What?
was basically consenting to the C-section, was it?
It was, yeah,
Yeah.
it was. And he was
Yeah.
telling me like all these things, like all these risks from the C-section and blah blah blah. And I was like,
Not processing any of this.
save, just save my, do
Yeah.
whatever you need to do. I said that to him. I said, do whatever you need to do. And then they, it seems like a second, but they undressed me, got me in a gown, gave Michael some scrubs, and wheeled us to the operating room. They tried to sit me up to put the injection in,
Yeah.
but I started to faint, so they lay me down to do it, and I remember that being really painful. But it's all such a whirlwind at this point. It's not really sank in what's happening.
Yeah. You just blur it out, don't you? I remember
It's like,
I labored for like 3 days before they took me in for an emergency C-section, and it just seemed
yeah.
like you flicked a switch and then you were in surgery and everything
Yeah.
was happening, and it was happening quicker than your mind could process it, I felt.
Yes, absolutely. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. And Michael was there, but I don't really, he was sort of in the background. There was so many staff around me. I remember a really nice anaesthetist at my head, the midwife Sadie, she was at my head. Also looking after Michael. She was brilliant. She was brilliant. And I remember lying down there and they were tapping my legs. Can you feel anything? I said, no, I can't feel anything. And then I just, it's horrible. So sorry if anyone's queasy, but just heaving. I kept heaving, heaving and heaving. And they said to me, we're going to give you some anti-sickness. And I was like, brilliant. Poor Michael was there, like here, and I was just heaving in his face.
Thanks.
And I was like, oh my God. And I remember them saying to me, we're going to give you some anti-sickness. And I thought, great, because this is gross. But then I felt like I was going to sleep, and I thought, oh, these are really good drugs. These are like, whew. And I just sort of felt like I was asleep, but I could hear everything that was going on. And I remember them saying to me, like, Claire, can you hear us? Can you hear us? Do you know what's going on? And Michael was saying, Claire, can you talk to me? Can you talk to me? And in my head, I was responding. And the anaesthetist put his fingers in my hands and he was saying, squeeze my fingers. And I felt like I was squeezing, but apparently I wasn't. And I didn't find this out until 2 days after, but they didn't give me any anti-sickness. I actually went that way because of the loss of blood. And that was actually me sort of being close to death. Which is really strange because I had no idea. I was completely there in my head. I could hear everything that was going on. And then I just remember Mike hearing, he's here now, Claire. He's here. They've got him out. He's here. And I was thinking, great. And I heard Michael say, they're working on him. And in my head, I was thinking, please don't work on him. Like, I half wanted them to, and I half wanted them to be able to, resuscitate him. then I thought, if he's been without oxygen for, it's probably about 4 hours I've been feeling this way now. You don't know what sort of brain damage he's going to have, or, are we doing more harm than good? So in my head, I was thinking, please don't try for too long. Just let him go. And I think they did stop. I think they did for about 10 minutes. And then they said, I remember the midwife coming over and said, well, hearing, unfortunately they can't resuscitate him. And she said, have you got a name for him? So the name Max, it's always been sort of a special name to us. On our second date, we went to shopping in Birmingham, and we were in HMV, and we were looking at a DVD of Mad Max, and we both said, oh, we love the name Max. It's always been, Michael said, I love the name Max. I said, oh, it's always one of my favourite names. I said, I love Maximilian. He said, yeah, I love that too. He said, that's the best way to say it. And we were like, ooh. And it kind it so it's always been a bit of a special name to us.
Always stuck with you.
Yeah, always. I don't know why we didn't name Jensen Max. Because it's always been the name that if I had a son, I was going to name my son Max. And for some reason, we didn't name it Jensen. I think it was waiting for something,
Yes.
special. So we decided on Max, and we were going to call him Maximilian. So his name is Maximilian Michael Haynes. So that's what we named him, which I don't think we did at that point because I was still out of it. But I just remember Sadie, the midwife, coming up and saying, they couldn't resuscitate him, so they've stopped. They wrapped him up, and she had him, and he was nice and warm in a little cot. And I remember thinking, good, someone's holding him, someone's snuggling him. And I think at this point, they were still working on me. I'd started hemorrhaging again after Max was out. So I hemorrhaged twice. And I remember they were just pumping blood into me. I had 9 bags in total transfused. That was over the course of 3 days. And then I think I had 3 bags of platelets as well. And I was kind of coming back around. They'd packed me, so I'd had sort of a lot of packaging inside. And they were trying to put like a balloon in. But I think because my cervix was closed, they were struggling to do that.
Sorry,
So
Claire, what was the purpose of the balloon?
to
Because
try and
I don't know.
stop
To stop the
the
bleeding.
hemorrhaging, yeah, to
Right,
stop the bleeding. So they
okay.
put that in your uterus and blow it up, and it puts pressure on the
Against the
inside.
wall. Right, makes sense.
Yeah, to try and stop the bleeding, I think. But they couldn't get that in. So he'd, for some reason, put it halfway. So I remember him saying, I'm gonna leave it here. But we've put, I know, but we've put internal packing in. And I also had a Robinson's drain, which was going straight in my stomach, and into a bag. And I remember them talking about intensive care at this point because I needed something. I think this was to help make my blood clot. I had something straight in an artery into my wrist just here. And because I had that in, I had to go to intensive care.
Yeah, it would have had an arterial lining. I'll
Yes, an
talk to Nicole
arterial
now. Then Nicole will be able to explain anything medical that we can. Blood staff can't look after arterial lines because it's in
No.
your artery. Yeah.
Yeah, if anything would have happened, I think it would have been quite serious, wouldn't it? So I
Yeah.
needed to be in intensive care because of that. And I remember thinking, that's okay then. I'm not that bad. I'm only going to intensive care because I've got this line in.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like reassuring myself that way. And I think my body temperature had dropped quite low. So they put this like, it was a blanket that had like a hot Hoover going into it, and it was blowing hot air into it.
Oh yeah. Wow.
Um,
Bear hugger, we call one.
A bear hugger.
yeah,
Oh
yeah,
wow.
and it was really nice. It
Yeah.
was really
Snuggly.
yeah. And then I remember when I was sort of coming back round, I was humming, and in my head I was singing like this perfect song. My Jensen is obsessed with Danny Go. On YouTube, it's like a he does singing and dancing, and Jensen has it on all day long. He's forever dancing. And I was singing these Danny Go songs, and Michael was like, "What are you singing?" I said, "Yeah." And he was like, "What are you singing?" I was like, "Danny Go." And he started laughing. I said, "Can't you tell?" And he was like, "No, it doesn't sound like Danny Go." So we were laughing, and he was like, "I'm glad you're singing though, so keep doing that." I was like, okay. And then I remember looking at Michael, and I could see Max over his shoulder. And then I said, please get your mum here, because I was just so concerned of him being on his own. Like I was fine. I was being dealt with, if you like. And I just thought he sat there on his own watching everything happen. So I remember just saying, please get your mum here. And then I heard the midwife say, your mum's here, Michael. And I thought, oh, thank God, you know, he's got someone to look after him. And he went out to see his mum, and Max was in the little room. They gave us a family room. And I just remember thinking, it's okay. Max is with Michael and his mum. I'm here. We're absolutely fine. And they'd rang my mum and dad, so my mum and dad were on the way. And I remember them saying, "We're not convinced she's stopped bleeding yet." So they left me rather than taking me to recovery. They left me in the operating room. And I remember it feeling like hours since I'd been in there, and they were just trying to warm me up, bring my body temperature back up. The anaesthetist was there. He was just the nicest person. He was lovely. And then my mum and dad came, and they gowned up and came into the operating room to see me. And typical dad talk, he was like, "Oh, this is a nice blanket they've got you in." Oh, they come up with some things, don't they? Yeah, Dad, the things I've got these days. But I could see that he was, you know, he was upset. He was crying. My
Was his
mum was
coping
crying.
mechanism
Yeah.
to making
Yeah,
sure.
the small talk. Yeah, the
Yeah.
dad jokes. But at this point, I was still like, and I was probably on a lot of drugs and in shock, and
Yeah.
I was fine. Like, I had no idea what was happening, really. I thought, I've had a C-section. You know, I've lost my baby. But it was all kind of like, you
Surreal,
know,
like it was happening.
surreal.
So
Yeah.
I always felt like it was happening to somebody else.
Yeah.
That's how I
Yeah.
always felt.
Yeah. Or not really happening. It was
Yeah.
really strange. And I thought, oh, they're all crying, they're all upset. I thought, I'm absolutely fine.
Yeah.
And I remember them coming in. Michael's mum came in. And Michael kept coming in. They brought Max into me, so I got to hold him. And I remember thinking, oh, he's so tiny, but he looks just like Jensen. He was the spitting image of Jensen as a newborn. And I thought, oh, you know, that's so lovely that he looks like his brother. Again, nothing really hit me at that point. I was still like just going with the flow.
Yeah.
And then they said that they've got a bed for me in intensive care, so they were taking me there. So they took me to intensive care, gave me a private room, which I was really glad about. So I'm a bit of a germaphobe and things anyway. So I was like, oh, I'm in my own room, thank God. And they were offering me a cup of tea, so I had a cup of tea, instantly threw it back up. Like so much. I don't know how it all
Next
came
time
out of me.
vomiting. Yeah. Redecorated the
Yes,
room, did
100%. The nurse came over, she was like, oh my goodness.
you?
So sorry. And she was like, what did you have for your tea? So
Enchiladas.
enchiladas.
Can you not tell while you're keeping it up?
I said I've never eaten them again. I don't think I ever will.
No.
And then I had a lovely nurse that was with me 24/7. Her name was Trish. She was lovely. And all the staff in intensive care were amazing. You get one-to-one care, which I didn't realise until I was in there. I remember saying, please don't leave me on my own. So I was a bit scared being in that room. I was like, don't forget about me. And she was like, I'm not leaving you, I'm here. And she wheeled a desk in and she sat by my side.
Oh.
She was brilliant. They were just all so lovely. And I remember saying to me, you look so fragile. And I thought, feel it. I feel fragile. That's
Yeah.
the only way I could say it. I felt broken. And then the next day, our family members came in. Sadie came in, the midwife that was with me through the operation, and she said, I'm going home now. This is Kelly. This is the midwife that's going to look after you. She's going to take some pictures of Max, take his hand and footprints. She'll bring him to you anytime you want to see him. And in my head at that point, I was thinking, why would I want to see, why do I want him here? And in hindsight, I think, oh God, like, but I think at the time I was so focused on me getting out of intensive care and getting strong and getting back to it to get home to Jensen. It was almost like, this has happened, we've got to get on with it now. And she kept saying, like, I can bring Max to you anytime you want. And I was like, no, thank you. I don't want him, to say it really bluntly, I don't want a dead baby lying next to me. Why would I want that? He's gone. Let him go. And I knew he was in there. They'd given us a bereavement suite on the labour ward. So Michael could stay there. And Max was in that room, in a cuddle cot, and I knew Michael's dad was in that room. He didn't come and see me in intensive care. He stayed with Max. So Max was never on his own. But Michael's mom, his brother, sister, my sister, mom, dad, they all came to see me. So when we were in intensive care the second day, they were still a bit concerned and I was still on blood transfusions. And my kidney function had dropped. So it had dropped to, I think it was, I don't know if it was 20 or 17%. And I think dialysis is 15%. Could be wrong.
No,
It was.
it's about right, yeah. You
Yeah,
hear a
so it's.
little bit about this, don't you?
Yeah, I've got a family member that's going through dialysis. And
Yeah.
you're
My
around.
mum does as well. So my mum had a kidney transplant in 2008. She had, funnily enough, so this was something else that was playing on my mind. After having me, her second child, she found out she had kidney failure. And then finally, so from having me in 1993, they gradually failed. Had a trans She was on dialysis for a couple of years and then had a transplant in 2008. So when they told me that my kidneys were close to failure, I was like, oh my God, this is,
But you thought
it's
you were
just
following
hitting
in your
difficult.
mum's footsteps, weren't you?
And I could see that my mum thought that as well. She could barely talk because she was holding it in.
Oh, she's seen you go through this as well. Like, I
Yeah.
remember my mum saying to me, because my mum and dad appeared at the hospital after I gave birth to my daughter, and my mum just said, I've never seen you like that before. And I think it put
Yeah.
her into a bit of shock because, again, that's your child as Yeah, well.
it's
So,
watching your baby go through that.
yeah,
It doesn't matter how old you are, does it? Like, you're still a baby.
and my mum said she wasn't thinking about my daughter at all, not in a bad way, but because she was just presented with her baby in this hospital bed in a complete state. And I think it really threw my mum off. And I think, we're all mums, and you can imagine yourself in that position as well, watching your child go through something very traumatic.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I remember them saying to me, they all kept saying to me, "You look so pale." And I kept saying to them, "I'm pale anyway. Like, I am a pale person." And they were like,
Yeah,
"That
I've lost
makes
all
you
this blood. I'm
look
not really going to be
pale."
pale.
I mean,
Yeah,
blood left in my body, but I'm all right. I'm just a pale person, don't worry. And then, so the it kind of started a bit of an argument then, because the top man of intensive care kept coming in and saying, "Why isn't she out of bed? Why hasn't she had a shower? Why has she still got a catheter in? This is the day after."
Well,
And like,
yeah,
he
chill
didn't
out,
want me there.
mate. Well,
Like, hang
yeah,
on.
probably because they're not used to people being awake in intensive care, so he's like, "Come on,
He
she's awake, get her out."
his thought process was, she doesn't need to be here. He didn't understand why I couldn't be on maternity, that I was only there because of this arterial line. So he wanted to get me out, and he was like, "I'm not concerned about her kidneys. This is what happens when the body goes into shock and you lose a lot of blood." And then the gynecology would come up and say, "We're not happy about this kidney. She needs to stay here till Monday when you can get a CT scan." He was like, "You shouldn't give her a CT scan." They were having a full-on argument in front of me. "You shouldn't give her a CT scan if it's a kidneys, because it can do more damage." And they were like, "Oh, give her an ultrasound." But it had to wait till Monday because it was the weekend. So anyway, over the course of a couple of days, they got me out of bed. They took the catheter out. They took all the packing out, which was the worst feeling. They took the Robinson strain out. My kidney function was still low and my blood count was still low. I think that might have been 22. I've just got a 17 and a 22 in my head, so I think my kidneys were 17 and my blood count was 22. So they were worried about those. But anyway, on the Sunday, so this happened Thursday night, Friday. On the Sunday, they agreed that I could go to the bereavement suite on the labour ward. So they moved me down there, but to begin with, they wanted me close to the midwife station. So they sent me to a labour room, which was the same room as I had Jensen in, which I thought was really quite nice. It's kind of full circle in a way, I don't know, but I felt comforted by it. And then I eventually moved to the Snowdrop suite, where we stayed until the following Wednesday. I had the kidney ultrasound on the Monday. That came back fine, no damage. They think it was just from the shock. And then on that Monday also, we had a blessing for Max in the hospital. But the midwives throughout all of this were just, I still call them angels to this day, because they didn't leave your side. They held your hand. They were They looked after Max, they looked after Michael, they looked after me like we were their own family.
Yeah.
They lit candles in the bereavement suite. They'd taken lovely hand and footprints of Max, done us a four Louis memory box, which is just so nice. So we had a blessing in the chapel at the hospital. And Kelly, the midwife, came with us. She brought Max in there for us, stayed in there the whole time. And then finally on the Wednesday, I think it was the Wednesday, I was able to go home. My blood count had come back up, my kidney function had come back up. But at this point, I'm still sort of numb, like nothing's really happened. I'd had a call off the health visitors, booking up an appointment to come and see my newborn.
No.
And
No.
then, and then I had another, this was a voicemail, and then I had another voicemail about 2 hours after saying, "I'm so sorry, we shouldn't have rang you. That was our mistake, blah, blah, blah." But it's
Such a
still like,
breakdown of communication, though, isn't it? It shouldn't be happening.
yeah,
it shouldn't be happening, no. And I remember thinking that I've got a midwife appointment. I had a midwife appointment the Monday. And I, over the weekend, I just kept saying to the midwife, so I've got a midwife appointment on Monday. I was, do I need to cancel it? Because they're going to think I haven't turned up. And they were like, no, we're so the midwives at Burton, they let the community midwives know that what had happened. They'd emailed and tried to call but couldn't get through. So then I did have a call off my community midwife to say that you've missed your appointment. I've booked you in for next week. If it's not suitable, please let me know. And so all these things were happening. And in hindsight, I think, that's really bad. But at the time, it was like, oh, these things are going to happen.
It really confuses me how it's sort of one system, but everyone works so differently that
Yeah,
there's
very
such a
differently.
breakdown of communication. Like I remember when I had my miscarriage, and I was literally, I'd been discharged, and it was like the day after I'd started like miscarrying, and it was so painful. It was honestly, it was awful. And I got a call from the midwife team to book in my booking appointment. And I had to say on that phone call that I'm currently having a miscarriage, so I don't need the booking appointment. But I felt really like, or I felt awkward
Awkward, yeah.
saying that on the phone, and I was like, surely everyone should be communicating so you don't have to be in that awkward position.
No, and they did the same with me, similar to yours, Claire, is the when I'd got home after losing our daughter. The midwives messaged me for like your next appointment, and I'm like, well,
Why shouldn't they?
have you
They
not
should
just
know.
read the
How do you
computer?
not
It's
know?
all on there.
Yeah, it's all on the notes. Yeah.
And it was my own, like you say, your community midwife. And I remember just, she was an older midwife, and I struggled with her anyway, very like old school. And yeah, anyway, I just remember messaging her like without being abrupt, but my daughter's dead. Like, why would I need to come and see you?
Yeah,
She was like,
absolutely.
oh, so sorry about that. I think
Like the
she felt
what?
really awkward. And
Yeah.
but then I'm like, well, so you should, because
Yeah.
you've
So
made
good.
me
Yeah,
cry
you should
again
know.
now for the fifth time today. And I just
Yeah.
like say, like, why don't all, I mean, they do all have different systems, which is stupid,
But
because they
it's.
all need to link.
Yeah.
But you're in hospital after just tragically losing your baby, especially like at 24 weeks and things like that. Like, yeah, it's just. It just baffles me.
Absolutely. That was another thing with the community midwife. So with Jensen, I had a lovely community midwife. She was really nice. And when I went with Max to the booking appointment, she wasn't there. I had another lovely midwife. The second appointment, which must have been October. So she did my blood pressure, urine, all the things she usually does. She was asking me, how are you? And I said to her at that point, I've been having a lot of headaches. But other than that, I feel okay. But this is like ongoing headache every day. And she said to me, she kind of brushed it off. She said, that's just pregnancy. My blood pressure was fine. My urine was fine. So I'm not saying, she didn't do a job or anything like that. But she kind of brushed that off. And I didn't, I was still suffering with it, but she's told me it's fine, it's just pregnancy, I'll crack on. And then after that, you have your scans, but they don't do your blood pressure or your urine. They didn't for me anyway. So really, I think I had an appointment. I think it was something like the 15th of October. I didn't have another appointment then until the 28th of January, where my blood pressure and my urine would have been checked. That's quite a long time, in my opinion.
No, I agree. I always remember thinking after that 20-week scan, because we had our 20-week scan with Luna. And I was like, oh, that's the last time I'm gonna pretty much
See
see
anyone?
anyone, see her again, definitely. 'Cause you don't have another scan after 20 weeks. Now I've got to wait 20 weeks. The next time I see her is hopefully when she's gonna be born at full term. And I just don't get that. Like, it's mad.
I don't either.
No.
And like all through pregnant, any pregnancy, people are telling you, oh, every pregnancy is different. I was convinced that Max was a girl because with Jensen, I had really bad sickness. With Max, I didn't. There was two worlds apart pregnancies. I thought, he's a girl. He was a boy. So it's like ingrained, and the professionals tell you that as well, don't they? Every pregnancy is different. So why, just because your first pregnancy was textbook, if you like, why would they assume that my second pregnancy is going to be that way? Why do I get less appointments on a second pregnancy than with a first? And I always think if someone had seen me, if they'd have done my blood pressure or a urine check between 20 weeks and 25 weeks, would they have picked? Could they put the placental abruption down to? I haven't even said that, have I?
No,
So
is that
what
what I was
they?
just about to say?
So what actually happened? It was a full placental abruption, so the placenta completely came away, which is why I was hemorrhaging. So all the blood that would have been going to Max was just bleeding into my abdomen. And Max was starved of oxygen. So, and then when I was still on the operating table, I remember Sadie came, when I was in recovery, Sadie came over to me and said, it looks like it was preeclampsia because your protein was 1,800. And apparently anything above 300 is dangerous in a pregnant person. So they were surprised that I didn't have any symptoms of preeclampsia. I didn't have any swelling, had the headaches, but they'd put that down to
His
normal
blood pressure
pregnancy.
as well. I was gonna say, was your blood pressure high when you went into MAU before you delivered Max?
No, it wasn't, but I had started bleeding at that
You
point,
just
and they
say
said
that
that it,
would have dropped your blood pressure.
yeah, so it could have been, but we're not sure. But had I been checked in 20 weeks or 25 weeks, would it? We'll never know. And I'm not blaming anyone. It's one of those things. Would it have been picked up?
So
Could we have
you
done
didn't
something
have
about it?
a midwife appointment in between that time. So what's
No.
I because of my experience during my pregnancy, I don't know what the Do you know if You got sore every week.
Oh no, I didn't leave. I
Oh, it's
didn't.
crap again.
I know.
Isn't it?
We'll send another link out in a minute, Claire, because we've got a
Oh,
10 minute.
God, we.
Yeah,
We just
no, it's
love a good
fine.
chat. It's fine.
So I remember, so I had a urine sample at 15 weeks, standard routine, and it
Yeah.
came back with glucose in my urine. So I was then sent for the glucose tolerance test dead early, and they diagnosed me with gestational diabetes around 16 weeks pregnant.
Oh,
So I was quite an early diagnosis, so a lot of people don't get
yeah.
diagnosed until about 28 weeks pregnant,
Yeah.
which is when the glucose tolerance test is usually scheduled.
Yeah.
So I must have been at the hospital every 2 to 3 weeks, I would say. But I don't know the amount of midwife appointments I had. Was that normal, as in I was just having scheduled midwife appointments,
Yeah.
or was I having extra midwife appointments as well as the hospital appointments? I don't
I
know.
would have thought you would have had extra. I can't remember.
I can't
But you
remember.
just have like your, after your 20-week scan, doesn't it just go to like your bump measurements then? Yeah.
Just measure your
So
bump.
after
Because
the
they were
20-week
testing my
scan,
urine every
yeah.
time I saw them
No,
because of
that's not.
the
Oh, no, that
glucose
is
in the urine.
normal. Yeah, that is normal.
Right, okay. It's so
That was for me. I don't know
confusing.
if it was for you, Claire. Did you have your urine checked? No.
Oh.
So from October, which would have been my 15-week appointment, would it?
Yeah,
Yeah.
which is standard, yeah.
That being 15 weeks, so from October to the 28th of January, I
Yeah.
had no appointments in between that time period where they did my blood pressure or urine.
Right.
Gosh, so when did they start? Oh no, sorry, I shouldn't say that. When should they have started measuring your bump? Did you get booked in for that? That 28-week
That
appointment,
was
sorry,
that,
the
yeah.
28th of January. Yeah,
I
so
think
the
they
day
measure
after
your
we
bump.
lost him.
Yeah.
Think that's when they start measuring your bump then from 28 weeks full term.
See, I never even got my bump measured.
What? Oh, well, that's because
Never.
you were having scans every week.
Well, I was having growth scans,
Yeah.
but at my midwife appointments,
Yeah.
they never measured me. But they did a Doppler every single time.
Okay.
But
We'll
again,
have
I
to
don't know if
get
that's
my
standard.
midwife friend on air so she can correct
Yeah.
us all what the
You
norm
just don't
is
know. Yeah,
because,
the
yeah. I
standardized.
can't remember. I've had two. Well,
I
one.
did have a Doppler with Jensen at every midwife Yeah.
appointment.
Yeah. Doppler, listen in, do your bump measurements, mark it,
Yeah.
plot it on your little graph,
Yeah.
growth chart.
And
So I
then
also
blood
have my
pressure,
urine
urine.
checked on them as well. Yeah, I
Yeah.
have it checked all the time.
Yeah.
But
Well, yeah.
I was they were just dipping it going, did you have sugary cereal for your breakfast? I went, yes, I did.
Yeah, I did.
Bloody
And what? Yeah, no.
hell.
Yeah, I think, I bet you like, because obviously we're not from the same area.
The trusts are
So I bet you
different.
the trusts work differently as well. Like, I wonder if different areas,
Yeah.
different trusts do have different standards, which I don't think they should because
No.
a pregnant woman's a pregnant woman. Like, there should
Yeah.
be a
Exactly.
standard,
Yeah.
pathway that
We
they follow.
had so many problems because our local hospital, maternity unit, while I was pregnant with my daughter, was shut. So as in the labour,
Yeah, we
where
didn't have it.
you couldn't give birth there, but my maternity care was there. And I wanted a home birth, which didn't happen, obviously. So I ended up birthing at another trust to my maternity. And I remember them communicating after my waters broke, and they were like, oh, you should be doing this, or you should be doing that. And they were telling me different things because my midwives were actually under one trust, but then I was going to go and birth at another. So
Yes.
it was quite confusing.
Yeah.
And I remember in mid my midwife appointments were taking place in my hometown,
Yeah.
but my maternity care was in another town. So they got like my growth scans mixed up because one trust was like, no, you don't have to have a growth scan until like 28 weeks. But then the other was saying 32 weeks.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
and I'm like, in that sort of stage where growth is, it accelerates during that point, doesn't
Yeah.
it? It's 3 weeks is, it's quite a big difference where things can change.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, absolutely.
yeah.
Absolutely. So
Yeah.
it's
Well,
always been a bit of a question, really.
yeah.
So going back to yourself and Max, Claire, when you said you were discharged yourself on the Wednesday, did you make the decision then that you were ready to leave the hospital and like leave Max and go home? Was that how you come about
Yeah.
this decision? Was it more waiting for you to be discharged? Yes. Yep. I think it was maybe the Monday. So whilst I was in hospital, I think I saw Max because my sister-in-law wanted to see Max. And I said, that's absolutely fine. Like, bring him up if you want. Anyone who wants to see him, hold him, absolutely can. So they brought him up to intensive care. That was on the Sunday. And that was the last time. Oh no, because we had the blessing on the Monday, sorry. But after the blessing, I said, you can take him now. You know, let him rest. I'm okay with that. And then we were discharged on the Wednesday. Again, at this point, I think I sort of disassociated myself with having a baby.
Yeah, definitely.
I wanted to get home to Jensen and, you know, get better. And I think all the way through, once I was home, my anxiety started to peak up. So that community midwife that I'd seen in October, she came round, and that really just set me off. So she came round and she sat on my sofa next to me and she said in this tone, so what's happened? So what happened? And it really took me back. I thought, well, don't you know? Like, do you really want me to sit here and explain to you what happened? She was like, you never said, you know, you didn't have any symptoms or any previous history in your family or anything like that, did you? Almost like I felt like she was saying, you didn't tell me anything that would signify something was wrong to cover her own back. And I thought, at this point, I was like, can you just go? Please go. You're talking about yourself here and you're not here to help me. She left anyway, and I burst out. Oh, she said something about the blood pressure as well. She said, what did she say? She said it dips when you lose a lot of blood. And you could have, what did she say to me now? Oh, she said something that really scared me anyway about blood pressure. She said you might find that it'll creep back up. You may have had high blood pressure anyway, and you'll probably find that it'll creep back up because you've lost a lot of blood, it's dropped. You'll probably find over the next few days it'll rise again. And
Yeah, thanks for
like
that. Just
that just like
something else for me
instilled
to worry about.
pure panic in me. It was something along those lines. And she left and I just burst out crying. I went on Amazon and I bought a home blood pressure tracker.
Oh, no.
And I did that the next day. So this was the Friday. I did my blood pressure at home and it was high. Had
But
a,
you stressed yourself
yeah,
out. What
I stressed
would she
myself
have
out.
anyway?
And I went back, I rang Sadie to give me the delivery ward number. She said, if you need us, you ring us. So I rang them and I said, my blood pressure's really high. What do I do? And she could hear that I was really panicked and upset on the phone. She said, I shouldn't do this, but come back here and see us. So I did. And they took my blood pressure. And it was high at that point, but they gave me a hot chocolate and they, you would know, just started talking to me, calming me down. She said, you're panicking yourself. So yeah, so they were really good. They invited me and they made me a hot chocolate. And they did my blood pressure over a period of time and it was fine. So they sent me home. They were asking me, I told them about the midwife coming round and the conversation we had. And they were really shocked that, you know, they couldn't believe that we'd had that conversation. And they actually emailed the community hub to tell them.
Yeah.
And the manager of the community hub rang me the following day and apologized. She, and said, like, the midwife did know exactly what happened. She shouldn't have asked you that, or, you know, and you know, and you just don't vibe with someone from the start. And I
Yeah.
kind of knew. So they swapped my community midwife anyway, and I had a different midwife come out sort of probably up to 2 weeks after I came out of hospital. And then on the Monday, so I came out of hospital on the Wednesday. This happened on the Friday. The following Monday, my husband was having an Xbox night with his friends, and I went to bed to watch a film. And I remember lying in bed, and I just started crying.
Yeah.
Started crying, and I didn't stop. And it was a cry that I've never cried before. It was like from the depths.
Yeah.
And I think that's when it hit me.
Yeah.
I just, you know, you're at home, you're supposed to have a baby, and your baby's not here.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's almost, it's over a week since it happened, but it took that long for it to sort of hit me. And
Yeah.
then, yeah, just broke down. I text my sister, I was like, I'm crying and I can't stop crying. She's like, where's Michael? I was like, he's downstairs, don't want to bother him. But he, I think he, I did text him. I was like, I'm crying and I can't stop crying. And he came up and he hugged me, and we just, you know, lay on the bed, and I could not stop crying,
Yeah.
bawling.
Probably like the
And I've
whole
kind of been,
week of emotion, though, isn't it, that you've kept in?
everything came out. I woke Jensen up. Jensen then came in, and we were all three of us were hugging. And it was, yeah, it was, I've never cried like that in my life, and I never want to cry like that again.
Yeah.
And
How
since
did
then,
you find
really.
that communicating with Jensen? Because you sort of had the same
Yeah.
situation where you lost your daughter, but you also had a child at home that you had to
Yeah.
think of,
Yeah.
and they're at a similar age. So you say when you gave birth to Max, how old was Jensen at this
He would
point?
have been at 2.5.
So it's very similar
Yeah.
to Lila. He was
Lila
two when
was,
two the
well,
day after.
I gave birth to Luna on the 28th of March, and Lila was two the day after.
So how did you sort of navigate explaining that situation to Jensen?
He didn't, I don't think he really understood.
No.
So we would say, Mummy's got a baby in a belly, and he knew there was a bump there. And we would say, you know, you're gonna have a little brother. And we would talk to him about it, but I don't think he really
Yeah.
grasped it.
Understood. Yeah.
We had like a baby bouncer and stuff out, just we got him a little doll just to sort of try and get him used to it, I suppose. And he would play with the doll and the bouncer, and he was really good with it, but I still don't think he understood. So really, he did meet Max. We brought Jensen to the blessing, and he met Max. Max was in a little basket, and Michael picked Jensen up to say, like, this is Max. And Jensen just said, looked at him and said, oh, our baby's sleeping. And we just kind of left it at that, really. We didn't say anything else. As soon as, like, you know, we put him back down on the floor, he ran off and was twisting and dancing. And then when I came home, it was just, Mummy's got a poorly tummy. You can't jump on Mummy. Can't pick her up. You know, she can't pick you up. And we kind of left it at that and kept it really simple. We have got Max's picture out. And I have said to him, you know, this is Max, this is your brother. But he still doesn't really, you know, even now,
Same with Lovely,
think No, he doesn't understand.
thankfully they don't understand. Well, that's how I felt, is thankfully she was too
Too young.
young to understand. Yeah, same with us. Like Lila knew mummy was pregnant. She was having a little sister, but she wanted a little brother. But like you say, she knew not to be gentle with mummy's bump. And then obviously when I suddenly went into hospital when my waters broke to have Luna, I was away from Lila for quite a period, which wasn't normal because at the time I worked in A&E, so I did long shifts. So quite often she didn't see me for like 2 days at a time. But I was like, oh, I don't think we can get away with like pushing this 10 days. But we didn't want to tell her too much because I just thought it's so traumatic for us as adults to be going through what we're going through. Like, I don't want to traumatize her at like 2 years old.
And it's a blessing, really. They're at an age where they don't process that grief because, like you say, it's hard enough to go through it as an adult, but to navigate that as a small child when you understand the loss must be really
It's really
difficult.
difficult,
Because it's like it's hopefully this doesn't come out wrong. It's you don't have to support that child through their grief because they don't understand it.
Don't
So
understand it yet.
yeah, so it's not like you're dealing with their grief as well as your own. They're sort of oblivious to it, which it is a blessing.
It is a blessing, especially like at that time when you do come home, like you said, Claire, without that baby, you have got your other baby at home that we found, myself and Richard found that she was like our saving grace.
Oh,
Like,
yeah. I
I
think it would have been
think
a completely different experience without them.
absolutely. Yeah, I always said that, like, Lila is just, she will never understand like what she gave me and Richard at that time and how
An
she
anchor, like to
yeah,
keep you
oh my gosh,
grounded,
yeah.
yeah.
Like, she was a reason to get up. Like, when we didn't want to get up in the morning, she
You
was a
had
reason to
to.
get up because we had to provide and for Lila. Yeah,
Definitely,
definitely. She's a little saving grace. Thank you, saving grace.
absolutely. And they'll never know, will they,
No,
what they've done for
that's
us.
it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know how the midwives were with you in hospital, but when we were in, so we ended up having to go to NICU with Luna for 8 days. They kept trying to get us to come in to see, trying to get Lila to come in to see Luna. And I was like, it baffled me because I'm like, God, like, this is horrible for me to sit next to an incubator and watch a tiny little baby. They were like, oh, yeah, bring her in. And I'm like, she's an absolute whirlwind. Like, she doesn't understand danger and not to pull that wire or not to pull the cot over. Like, they were just like, no, come in. Like, you need to let her come and see her. And we chose not to. Like you say, personal choice. We chose not to just because I was like, I can't deal with this. So how's a 2-year-old going to deal with that? And like she, like you say, Jensen had a little baby to try and get used to having a baby. Lila loved playing with baby dolls, but like she swung them round by their arms and legs and stupid and would whack it. Like, you can't do that with this baby. So,
And like, why
and
can't
she,
we play? Like, play
yeah, and she was
together.
the same size as actually, like with Max. They're so tiny and so precious. They look like a baby doll. Like, you can't swing Luna or Max around by the leg. Like, it doesn't work like that. And she wouldn't have understood that. So we chose not to. And then when Luna passed, they said again, are you not bringing her in to see your sister? And I'm like, no. Like, and I found it really difficult because I felt like they were very pushy to say, bring her in, bring her in, bring her in. But we felt at the time that it was not right to. Don't know how I mean, obviously, I know your experience is different. You chose for Jensen to come and see Max.
I mean,
How
to
did
be
your
honest,
midwives?
we probably wouldn't have. It was only the fact that all of our, when I say all of our family, all of our immediate family, our brothers, sisters, mums, dads,
We're
who
all
are the
coming.
family that are local to us, we're all coming to the
Coming.
blessing. So
Yeah. So they
we
would have been the
thought,
ones looking after Jensen at home. Yeah. No,
and
that's
the support worker on the labour ward did say, if he plays up, if he's loud or anything like that, let me know and I can watch him. And we
yeah.
said thank you, but I thought he's not really going to want to sit with a stranger.
No.
But again, to be honest with you, he was at the back of the room and he was looking out the window. I knew he was behind me and he was going, wow. You know,
Oh.
midway through the blessing because he saw an aeroplane in the sky, and it just like gives you that little bit of,
It's a bit of comfort,
they're
isn't
so innocent. Yeah. You know, they have no idea what's going on.
No, yeah.
And again, everyone else was crying in the room. I wasn't. And I thought, like, he's oblivious to all of this. And it made me feel better. And like, I didn't push it. I didn't say, this is your brother, you know, he's dead or he's died. Or we just picked him up and said, this is baby Max. And he said, oh, our baby's sleeping, very cute. And we said, yeah, it's cute, isn't he? Put him back down and he ran off and went to play. And that is literally how we've left it. We did have a funeral for Max, but he didn't come to the funeral. I just think it, like you say,
It's a bit
it's too much
much.
for them to understand, isn't it? You know, why is
Definitely.
everyone crying over this baby?
Yeah, and they'll pick up on whether they know the situation or not, they pick up on your emotions as well. So, if he was there, he would still feed off the energy that's, at a funeral or the blessing or whatever. They'll pick up on other people's emotions, whether they understand them or not. And they're not going to remember it either way, that they were there or they weren't there, I
No,
suppose.
exactly. We'll tell him about Max when he's older and he can understand it, but you know, as far as I'm concerned, he's quite removed from it. He's thankfully, you know, even the pic we've got one picture of Max downstairs and I've got one of him next to my bed. But he never looks at it and says, you know, who's this? Well, if anything, I say, oh, you know, where's baby Max? And he'll look. But he still doesn't know. And
No, yeah.
you know, I'm not offended by that. You know, he's a
Yeah. He's
he's in
a
a world of his
toddler.
own. Is he th
Yeah,
three now? He's
he's
not
three
four yet, is
now.
he? Three? Yeah. They're in the world of
Stay
their
that
own at
way as
that
long
age.
as you can.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Oh.
Thinking about sort of after Max passed and your experience, I know that we've obviously connected over Instagram and you have started running to
Oh,
sort of as a
congratulations on your run, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Smash
I
that.
can't believe
But
it.
you've obviously found an outlet, so for to get you through your grief and your loss and find a way to cope. This podcast is something that we're doing to get us through the sort of the tough sort of mental states that we've, that all the emotions that we're going through, it helps us to talk. Is there anything else that you're doing, or tell us about your journey with your running that you're finding that is helping sort of with your coping mechanism?
I mean, for me, the one thing that really stuck in my head throughout all of this was when the lady in intensive care said to me, you look so fragile. And I thought, oh, I don't want to be fragile. And it kind of made me think, like, my body could have very easily given up on me. You know, during that operation. And it didn't. I'm here. It's healed itself. You know, I've had a C-section. I've had, you know,
Wounds
kidneys
in
failed.
your uterus. Yeah. Where?
And it's just, I've watched it heal itself. And I thought, what a brilliant body I've got. And to be honest with you, I did take it for granted. I didn't exercise. I ate what I wanted when I wanted, you know, two bags of crisps a day and chocolate and all the good stuff. I thought I really need to start looking after, you know, giving a bit back to my body.
That's got you through this.
That's got me through this, yeah. And also, you know, just being as healthy as possible for Jensen. Because that also goes through your mind, like, when I was pregnant, yes, I followed all the rules of, you're not supposed to eat, raw fish and whatever, all the meats and the cheeses, and didn't drink alcohol. And then I thought, well, really, you did sit there, you had white bread. I wasn't doing anything that was healthy for my body. I followed the rules in what I shouldn't eat, but what I should eat, I probably didn't. I lived off salt and vinegar crisps, salted pretzels. I had
But
a lot
that's
of salt
all
and
right. Me, I still do
Yeah,
that
I think I
now.
would
Yeah.
have. I was gutted when I was diagnosed so early
Oh, you
with
found it
just,
really
oh,
difficult, didn't you? Yeah.
16 weeks in, they were like, you've just got to watch your diet. And I didn't have a brilliant diet. It wasn't really bad, but it wasn't really good. But I play sport, so
Yeah.
I was like, I can counteract it, And then when they diagnosed me with gestational diabetes, the one thing that triggered my blood sugar more than anything else was potato.
Oh.
So there was no chips,
Oh.
nothing, and I was like, I used to go to like a pub lunch, and they were like, what do you want? And I'm like, everything on the menu's got
Yeah.
chips, like these
Chips.
sort of, like,
Yeah.
I know. And I was like, and bread, yeah. So I but then I was whether it was a blessing, because I actually, up until like the last like month, I didn't put any weight on,
Yeah.
and I only put about 3 kilos on in my entire pregnancy, and she
Wow.
weighed nearly 4 kilos when she came out. So that was the silver lining to the diabetes. But I think you go into it thinking, oh, I'm going to crave something, and I can just
Eat
sort of
what I
eat, yeah,
want, when
eat
I
for
want.
two. And sort of I was forced really to be really, really good, but it wasn't any fun. It was
No,
so not fun.
that's what, like, you just think of these things, don't you? If I had gone on a walk every day, like they say, or if I had eaten a bit better throughout my pregnancy, would it have been any different?
Yeah.
I don't know. And then I
Can't
thought,
think.
well,
Yeah, can't
because it
think.
was blood pressure related, if I change my diet now, so I was spending all Googling what foods are good for your blood pressure. I went through a stage of, I remember being around my mum's, and they were like, oh, should we have an Indian takeaway? And I was like, no, salt. I can't, my blood pressure. And they were like, Claire, you need to chill out a little bit. But I have chilled out. And I'm not doing it for sort of to make my blood pressure better. I'm just doing it. I still eat what I want. I'll still have chocolate. I'll still have a takeaway. I'll, have the good stuff. But overall, I've added more fruit to my diet. I'll lay off the white bread. I've been having brown bread and just doing little things to make me feel better. And I've started moving my body, which I did not before. I was such a couch potato. Like, I did not exercise. I don't think I exercised or even did a jog since probably leaving school. If I even did it in school, I remember, sitting out on a lot of PE lessons in school.
Because I played badminton, and I've started, it was a couple of years ago that, oh, nearly, it's 3 years in Feb coming up, that I joined like a competitive club. And as of like last year, having my daughter and the trauma that went through that, and then I lost quite a dear friend, and then I left the job I was in, and there was quite a lot of change last year. And I remember feeling that my badminton club and the people at that club were my outlet. It was it I sort of gained a new support system, and the sport really helped, and the exercise helps, and it makes me feel good when I go. So I continue to go. Like I played until I was about 32 weeks pregnant, 31, 32 weeks pregnant. Not that I moved about much. They were like, are you gonna run for that? I'm like, no, I'm like 7 months pregnant, no. But I don't know whether you're the same, Claire. It is definitely a mental reprieve from
Yeah, absolutely.
what you thought processing. I literally walk through the door of that sports hall, and it's like everything else falls away. Like whatever stress or sort of emotion I'm going through that day, I sort of leave it at the door. And it's like a few hours a week where I just don't have to think about anything else. So it's been
Yeah,
really
definitely.
helpful.
Yeah, I think I put it in one of my posts, but for me, running has been a bit like it feels a lot like the grief. So when I'm running, I think, oh my God, this really hurts. I can't breathe. Everything hurts. I can't breathe. You know, my chest is burning. But if I just put one foot in front of the other, I'm going to get to where I'm going. And it's, you know, I'm going to get there. And that is literally what I think to myself when I'm running. And I also think, like, if Max, this tiny little innocent boy, can go to heaven all alone, I can run. I can do this little jog. You know, I don't know, it's really strange. For me as well, even before I was pregnant with Max, I think I, because during COVID, I started to work from home and we still work from home. So I don't really leave the house that much. And if I do, I'm with Jensen or Michael, my mum or my sister or my friends.
Somebody.
I'm with someone. I don't really leave the house alone. And they're kind of like my security blanket now. And when she said to me in the hospital, "You look so fragile," I thought, you know, I am fragile. I'm probably really nervous and scared to leave the house alone. So even getting out there and going on a run on my own, it just makes me feel, it makes me feel strong, like mentally and physically. You know, I'm not made of glass. I'm strong. I can do it. You know.
I think you should be really proud of yourself, because I think from what you've told us, like you said, you suffer with anxiety anyway, and then you and I think a lot of people's anxiety was heightened during COVID, which has sort of bred more mental health issues for a lot of people. And then you've obviously carried on working from home, which can be quite isolating because you get out of the habit of going out of the house, and then you've gone through this massive traumatic experience of the loss of Max, and you're already suffering with an element of anxiety as well, and that isolation, and then you add the trauma on top, and the fact that you've now been able to find an outlet that helps that and sort of counteracts that anxiety and that isolation is, it's really impressive, and you should be really proud of yourself that you've been able to do that.
Yeah,
Right.
you
Thank
should.
you.
Yeah, it has helped in so many ways. I just feel like even with Max, so what happened with Max, I feel like it's just changed my world completely. It's changed my perspective, my personality, my, you know, my patience, my temper. It's changed my world. And before, you know, say if Jensen was poorly, I would panic for many different reasons. If he, you know, if he's poorly and I need time off work, that's going to look bad. Or if he's poor, what if he's poorly and I don't catch it? What if it's something really bad and it's, my mind would just escalate. Whereas now I feel like one of the worst things in the world has happened. So if Jensen had chicken pox, maybe April, May, June time, and like Michael on the Sunday night said to me, like, "What are you going to do this week?" And I said, "Well, if he's poorly, I'll have to have time off work. It. If my child's poorly, I'm going to have some time off work to look after him." And that's that. You know, it's kind of slowed my mind down and really helped put things into perspective of silly things that I would panic about before. Don't really matter anymore, you know.
No, I think it definitely makes you realize that your family's priority, not work. Because that's one thing that I also found is obviously working in the NHS, worked through COVID, pregnant with Lila, everything was work. Work was my life because that's all I had at that time. Obviously, I had my partner, but we both had good careers and we put everything into work. Worked through COVID, worked overtime through COVID, pregnant, then had Lila. And although I had Lila, I still put a lot into work. Because she was there, I still had her. She was there when I got home. She was going to be tucked up in bed. She's safe, and you just kind of fit it around your life, don't you? When you have a child, it just becomes the new normal. But then when you go through like the loss of a child and not bringing that child home, like you say, I always say that my whole world got turned upside down, and it'll never be the same again. I'm not the same person. I never will be the same person. I don't care. Jodie always tells me off because I always say I don't care anymore, and I'm always apologising. But I'm not the same person, so I'm not that caring nurse anymore. Because I just don't care about your stumped toe or whatever you're coming to tell me about. I'm just like, oh, whatever.
Trivial, it's trivial
It is
stuff. You don't,
trivial from like the things that we've been through and the trauma that we faced to not bringing my daughter home. That completely flipped our perspective on life. And I was like, no, and then I was like, no, I'm gonna leave my job because it's not important. My family's important. And yeah, it's just, I think the how your world turns upside down completely. It's just mad. But you do, like your perspective on life changes, your perspective on your family changes. Like they are everything. And like you say, well, doesn't matter if I'm gonna miss a day of work, like whatever, you'll get over it. But if you miss not realizing that Jensen's poorly, then you wouldn't forgive yourself, and that's how I felt afterwards. And I'm always a bit of a blasé, whatever, you've got a temperature. Like if Richard says he's poorly, I used to be like, oh, whatever, you'll get over it. Like I've dealt with this at work all day, every day. Like I don't need to come home and you tell me that you've sneezed twice. Like you'll be fine. And then. And with Lila as well, I was always quite blasé. I'm like, you've got a temperature. Well, we do this, this, and this, and we deal with it. Like, very matter of fact, you have your Calpol, we strip you down, you're fine. Because she's never really been poorly. So then, and I've never been in hospital myself, like as a patient. So then, go in and being in like intensive care with a newborn, like it was just, even for a nurse that faces that every day, all day, like it was just the most horrific thing. So then when I came home, like with Lila, I wanted to wrap her in bubble wrap. And I was so overprotective. And that was one thing that I really struggled with because I was like, well, no, we're not going to the park because you might fall and break your leg. And like little thing, I like catastrophized things massively because I've never had to deal with my own child being poorly or myself being poorly. And I was nowhere near as bad as you. Like, it sounds like you really had it hard, like for your fighting for your own life. I was in hospital and I didn't get to intensive care, but I had sepsis, and they said like the next step is intensive care. And if we have to put Nicole in intensive care, then we save Nicole, we don't save the baby. And I was like, give over, like you'll save the baby, like it doesn't matter about me, because that's what mums do, like you just protect your child. And afterwards, I was a nightmare. I'm like, used to like panic at everything, and like that. I think, what did they say I'd got? Medical anxiety, I suppose, which I've never had before. But I was like, oh God, no! Like if I let go of a hand, gotta wait another 10 minutes again. If I let go of a hand, like she's gonna get hit by a car, or if she falls over, oh my God, she's broke a leg, and I'm gonna have to go to hospital. And I've never been like that, like ever. Never. And it's just, yeah, it is mad how it comp like any trauma just completely reshapes your whole life. You have to like it's like you have to start again. You have to learn who you are again.
Definitely. And I do think that has, it's horrible to say, and I hate saying it, but like, because there is no positive of it,
No.
but if there is one thing that has come from this, it definitely made me as a person stronger, calmer, just I don't know how to say it. It's helped me find myself as a person. I know that sounds really cheesy and cliche, but it
No.
really has.
Yeah.
I think I have more of a self purpose now, whereas before I was very much a people pleaser. I still am a people pleaser, but I would run myself to the ground trying to please everyone.
Yeah. Same.
We said this, we
Christmas,
said this,
yeah.
because I've always been a person that I won't tend to do things if I don't want to do them. I've always been quite blunt, straight to the point,
Tell you how it is.
tell you how it is, don't want to do it, not doing it. But there's always been a sort of a grey area with that, that if there's something that, there's an obligation there or whatever, I will sort of bite my tongue and go along with it. I've just got to the point where I'm like, I'm not doing it. Life's too short. I ain't doing what I don't want to do. And as long as my daughter's happy and my husband's happy, I actually not even really bothered about myself. As long as they're happy, then nothing else is going to get in the way of that. And I don't really care who I upset.
No,
I didn't really care
I was
much
gonna say,
before, but
didn't if you did before, don't you want? I ain't gonna say that.
no, I didn't before, but I'm even less so now. Like, I
Yeah.
think everyone, if anyone says, oh, I don't care what people think of me, or I don't care if I hurt somebody's feelings, I think that is probably a little bit of an exaggeration, I
Yeah.
think. But I'm more so that way now, that I'm like, I don't want to spend time worrying about other people. And you said that. You said,
Yeah,
I've
I
got
said
enough of my
enough.
own issues,
Yeah.
my own problems, my own things to work through. That, because we were talking about you being sort of an agony aunt.
Agony aunt for a, yeah. Friendship group. Everyone goes to Nicole for
Everyone goes to
advice.
Nicole, and Nicole's just, and rightly so, you've got enough on your own plate that you can't sort of
Yeah.
carry anybody else's crap,
Yeah,
to be
no. I
honest.
think like the mental load
Mental load,
is
yes.
yeah. How you felt like after you, like, well, you say after you come out of hospital, it took you a week to kind of catch up with everything that you'd gone through, and then it hit you. And I was similar to that, that it only really hit me once I'd got home because, you know, you're in hospital, you're focusing on getting yourself better, trying to get your baby, or and then coming home, and it hit my partner a lot sooner because I'm sure, like your husband, he had to watch you go through it and your son go through it, whereas we're just lay there, like you say, even though you're nearly, you know, knocking on the doors, you were like, no, well, as I can hear you, like I'm fine. Like, what are you all going on about? And you're not worried about yourself because that's what mums do. Like, you put everyone else and you're like, Michael, make sure you've got your mum here. You're like, you're worried about him. Yet he's just sat next to you and doesn't want to leave you because he's so worried, you know, about losing you as well as his son. But then it hits them, I think, sooner. So then it hit you when you got home. And that's how it was with me and Richard, that I was kind of always one step behind Richard because the trauma hit him in hospital and it didn't hit me when I got home. And then you're just trying to like play catch up, and it's everything's going round in your mind constantly. Like, I just felt that my brain didn't have a break. Like, I cried like you did, like cried, like uncontrollably cried for days, weeks, you know, however long it was. And I remember like hitting my head, being like, it just won't stop. All the whys, what ifs, if we'd done this rot different, if I didn't have two cups of coffee a day, should I have just had one? Would it have made a difference? And the things that your mind goes through, like it's, oh, it's just, yeah, it just completely, like you don't want to get off the sofa, you don't want to get out of bed because as soon as you do, it's another thing to for your mind to think about. Like that's how I found it anyway, and found it just struggle to get back to your normal, even though it's a new normal.
You
I
do
thought,
have to find your new normal, don't you? Completely. It's a brand
definitely.
new life. It's a
Yeah,
brand new life.
definitely. Yeah. Well, we're nearly running out of time again here, girls. So we might have to wrap this one up,
Nice.
hey?
But I think
Oh,
we've
we could
done pretty well
chat
to,
all night, couldn't we,
yeah, done
between
pretty
us
well
two?
to do three Zoom links to
Yeah.
this podcast because we're just so useless.
Oh, no, yeah.
But I think from my perspective, there's a lot of feelings and emotions that I can understand, but I think Nicole has been through the same experience, obviously different circumstances, but the same experience, as she understands totally how you feel, Claire, more so than I do. But I just want to say thank you for allowing us to speak and sharing your story and telling us about Max and telling us about Jensen and, and your story as well, your personal story and what you went through. So thank you so much for logging in and telling
No,
us your
thank
story.
you. Thank you for inviting me on. Honestly, I love talking about it and I could talk about it forever. So thank you for listening.
No, yeah, I
No.
think that's definitely one thing that we've said before that we've got in common, is that we're both talkers. We like to share our story, whereas like we know that some people
They
might
don't,
not, like to talk. So yeah, I mean, we'll continue to speak outside of this podcast anyway. But like Jodie says, thank you for sharing and opening up, and you're a very brave, strong lady. And yeah,
Thank you.
very inspiring after everything that you've been through. Yeah, you're amazing. So well done.
Thank you both. It's been lovely to talk to
Yes, you
you.
too. Thank you for your time, Claire. We appreciate it.
That's all right.
Nice.
Speak
We'll
to you
speak to you
soon.
soon.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Thanks again to Claire for sharing her story and experience there. I hope the listeners, and I'm saying enjoyed like you did.
Enjoyed,
Yeah, I hope the listeners found some comfort in Claire's story. If you did have a similar experience that you wish to share with us, like Claire has, then we'd love to hear from you and share your story. If you'd like to DM us on our Instagram, that's at Look to the Moon Podcast, or you can always send us an email at hello@looktothemoonpodcast.com. If you want to share your experience, your story, or if you just want to say a little something about one of our stories.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, love to hear.
See you on the next episode.
See you then. Bye.
Bye.